I've always believed this. Business is about people, and people are about relationships. No matter whether we're digital or web conferencing or whatever, but if you develop chemistry with people, yeah, you start to feel that trust, likability, and man, that makes all the difference in the world.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at procurementexpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. I've got Ryan Scher, who is a fractional CFO building his dream business in Winnipeg, Canada. And we're going to talk today about how he came to start to develop his fractional CFO business. We're going to talk about his background in business as well. And we're going to cover two clients in particular where he had an outsized impact. And I think it's going to be a good story to listen into if you're interested in or considering hiring a fractional CFO to understand how it might help your business as well. Ryan, you're very welcome to the podcast. Maybe you could open us up by answering the question, which is something about you that not many people know.
I would say that if there's something about me that not many people know, there's probably a reason, but I'll say this. I really like business. It's not like work for me, and not everybody understands what I mean by that. I think some people do, but it really energizes me, and I could do this stuff all of the time. I love what I do, and it's especially the case since I've been in my own business. But that's something that not everybody knows, and I'm pretty happy with.
I'm glad you said that, because my wife and I were sitting, she's also in business, and the other day we were marveling at the scout leaders in my kids' scout den, and my wife volunteers there, but some of the scout leaders are so dedicated, and they're so into it, and I see other people doing a lot of these things. I sometimes feel bad about that, because we do a bit, but not as much as these other parents. They seem amazing. And then I was like, why is that? And I was like, we talk business all the time. This is our hobby and our business and everything rolled into one. And it's, if you're not, you either get it or you don't. And you feel self-conscious about saying that to civilians, let's call them, people who aren't. Yeah. And I actually really enjoy socializing with people who are also into business, because I can nerd out.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's like. Yeah. It's just like being a kid and playing your sport or your hobby. Exactly,
yeah.
Like.
Yeah. And we'll get on to your background a little bit. You're in Winnipeg, Canada. What's the business environment like out there? Is it easy to find other people who share your passion?
Yes and no. Winnipeg is right in the center of North America, the geographical center. Everybody in Toronto would say that Toronto's the center of North America, or at least of Canada. And to some degree, they'd be right. The vast majority of the population is in Toronto. The business is out there. Winnipeg doesn't have a large population, just under 1 million people. And there's a lot of rural communities within long distance of Winnipeg, but not a lot of large, no major centers. Minneapolis is the next closest major center. And beyond that, it would be Calgary, Canada. So there's not a lot of business here in Manitoba, but when I was in the corporate world, I traveled all the time right across Canada, and I was working with large multinational companies that had operations in Canada. I got very familiar with the business landscape and what was happening in Canada. I've got a master's of business administration from the University of Manitoba. Winnipeg is in Manitoba. So I've got an MBA degree. I've got a lot of business experience. I've been doing business for, well, over 30 years. In fact, when I was a little kid, I did business. I was an entrepreneur going door to door in the wintertime with a shovel and with a lawnmower in the summertime. So I really enjoy business. In Winnipeg, what has really opened things up is the fact that we now use web conferencing to meet with people. So I can meet with people all over the world. James, you're on a different continent than me, and I've got business prospects I'm talking about that are in Africa right now. I've had a client in Africa, but I can do almost anything I want to do over video conference. I can share screens and look at metrics, reports, financial data. It's all very easy to do, and it's more efficient and more effective than trying to do it in person with a laptop, like I used to do prior to COVID. So I would say that in general, business in Winnipeg is not that bad. There aren't a lot of conferences here. There's not a lot of opportunities for me to speak in person in front of an audience, but there are a few. And I do get out and try to enjoy the people of Winnipeg. Most of the people, if they're in business, it doesn't matter if they're in Winnipeg or Toronto, Ireland. I think that, like you and I, we all have something in common. And that works for me where I'm at.
Yeah. So now you also have your own podcast. Now I find podcasts being turned into my weird type of networking for people. So in terms of business development, how has the podcast strategy worked for you? What do you like about it? And is it working?
Yeah, it is working. It's interesting and fascinating. I started just because I had a few clients that didn't have any exposure on social media. And so I said, let's do a podcast. I'll just interview you and record you. And we did that. And they got the word out on Facebook and LinkedIn or what have you. And I kind of liked it myself, because it was a different kind of conversation that I would have. And so I started to reach out to different people in different areas, just wanting to speak with them if they were interested in being on my podcast. It didn't take a long time to do, but it was a good business conversation. And I found that there was a lot of interest in it. Different people would come back to me and say, wow, I watched that podcast. I really liked what that person said about this or that. And I really enjoyed it myself. So I decided to make it more of a regular routine. And it's something that we use. We chop it up a little bit and we post things on social media. But many times when I'm in the business community in Winnipeg, people will walk up to me and say, hey, I've seen your podcast, which in some ways is surprising. You know, I didn't realize that many people watched it. It is a way to connect with people. I can connect directly with the people that are on the podcast. It gives them an opportunity to connect with my audience. And then my audience gets an opportunity to hear what other people have to say about business. That's a win-win-win all the way around. It's not difficult to do. I do enjoy it. And it seems like my guests enjoy it. So I'm going to do more of that. I'd like to lean into it a bit. I'm focused on my core business, of course, but from the business development point of view, it is a way for me to display to some degree my ability to network with different business people and to tap into best practices and knowledge that I can bring to my clients as well. So when my clients or prospective clients watch my podcast, it gives them a sense of who I am, what I do, and how I can help, and who I'm connected with. And as business people, we're all looking to increase our connections and increase our brand awareness.
So I was lucky enough to be a guest on the podcast. Maybe you can just remind us of the name so we can Google it.
Mastery Fractional CFO's Punchy Podcast.
Punchy Podcast. Yeah, great name. Yeah. And what I noticed, because I want to go a bit inside baseball here, is that there was clearly a process here, right? So clearly, as I was became a guest, and it was a process for me to come in, and then you had a producer, you very clearly, like any business process, you thought a lot about what happens before, during, or after. So I'm guessing that was no coincidence. So do you take that approach to, is that how you look at business? Is it kind of very checklist driven, or how do you stay so organized? Because it came off as being very professionally done.
Yeah, I'm process oriented. So I'm trying to make sure that when I do anything in my business, or honestly, probably in a lot of things in my life, even beyond business, I try to be process oriented. I try to be efficient. One of the things I say as a fractional CFO to my clients is you want to really understand what you're doing with every dollar in the business. What's the return on investment for every dollar you spend? You don't want to just look at the dollars as expenses. You want to look at them as investments. And what are you going to get back from that? It's not just the dollars, though. It's also the time you spend. And so in putting together a podcast, I looked at, I tried to some degree do a little bit of work regarding what are some best practices, what's the best platform, or what's a good platform I can use to record the podcast, what do I want to get out of it? Reverse engineer a little bit from what your vision of things might be, like what kind of podcast did I want to have? I reverse engineered to, okay, what do I need to start then? I need probably a good idea to have a producer. My first podcast, I forgot to hit record. So I started including a producer to look after things like your lighting sucks or the sound is not good. These kinds of things. So I include one of my team members on my podcast now. But yeah, that's something that I've done is just put together. For me, I use the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule, which is 20% of the efforts are going to give you 80% of the results. And the other 80% of the efforts are going to give you the other 20% of the results. So for anything like a podcast or a lot of things that I do in business, I'm not trying to be a perfectionist, but I'm trying to make sure I do enough diligence that I'm going to get 80% of the results. And then I'll learn from there and have some fun doing it. And I encourage my clients to do the same thing. If a business is developed to the point where they're really trying to refine things, get that last 20% of the juice out of the lemon, so to speak, then I'll help them do that because I have a mind for process, but I'm not over the top on process.
Yeah. Okay. You said a few interesting things there. One is because I've observed that this is something that I think especially people who are on finance team can struggle with is going over top and getting everything perfect before you want to do something, right? Because that's a training from a financial side. Everything has to balance. And when it comes to developing a business, it's a lot more probabilistic, let's call it, where you've got to sometimes shoot first and ask questions later. And the quality is in the quantity sometimes. I think especially with content creation, it's a lot of, you just got to get going, get the muscle going of reps in and doing something, and you're going to trust that you're going to get better.
Exactly.
My wife once said to me, James, what I love about you is you never get embarrassed. And which immediately made me think, when should I have been embarrassed that I wasn't even aware? But is it podcasting? I feel a little bit like that as well. You just have to get out there. You could, if you thought about, oh no, someone's going to see this and they're going to listen, it's not going to be perfect, you'd never get anywhere. So you need that practicality on that side of it.
And agreed.
When you've decided on your, let's say something like a podcasting is one, a marketing strategy, let's call it. Have you set yourself a target and a sort of an ROI, or say, okay, if I get to this stage, I'm able to actually reach this much business and I'm going to keep going with it? Or are you just going to quarterly review it and decide I'm going to stop, start, continue? What's your mind frame around any new marketing strategy in order to decide when to keep going? Because there's always this awkward phase where you're like, is it not working or have I not just done it well enough? And you're never really sure which it is.
With the podcast or with anything in business or anything in life, I think it's a matter of try something, see what the results are. If the results are good, try to learn why they're good and how you can lean into that more. And if it's not working, try something else. Figure out what you can do to make course corrections. And for any sort of marketing initiative or business development initiative, it's challenging, right? Because the results lag behind the efforts quite a bit in some cases. Yeah. So effort that you put into building a social media awareness today may not pay off in clients today or tomorrow or the next day. But over time, you're building awareness, and it's difficult once you've got that social media presence. It's difficult to really track when somebody becomes a client how much the social media or the podcast or what have you might have benefited the end results. I get people coming to me and saying, hey, I've looked at some of your posts on LinkedIn. I like the material. You're talking my language, or you're talking maybe about stuff that's not exactly my language, but can you tell me more? And that's exactly what I would hope for. And if I can expand my reach, that's great. But marketing, business development, advertising, brand awareness, all of that's a huge aspect. That's one of the fundamental components of business in general. If you look at operations, you look at finance and accounting, and then you look at sales and marketing. And sales and marketing is one of the pillars of business, but there's a lot to it. There's a lot of different ways to go about doing it. It's difficult to say what the return on investment for each individual endeavor is. But as much as you can try to gather information around that, I think that it helps you. And that's very much, whether it be a podcast or anything else, you try to look at your results and get an idea. And some of it's only instinctual. Sometimes it's not perfect data that you're looking at, but you want to get an idea of what's working and do more of that. And if something's not working, I was having a conversation the other day with somebody and we were talking about this. And the idea is, if it's not working, don't just do a whole bunch more of it. If you're getting zero results, 10 times zero is still zero. Doubling up on something that doesn't produce anything, you're really better off just abandoning it. You want to give it the right opportunity. You want to give it a fair chance. But at some point, you have to be willing to cut bait and try something completely different. And I think especially in today's changing environment, when it comes to the digital age, old ways of getting messages across to prospective clients are not the same. Newspaper ads, TV ads, radio ads, not that they don't work or that they're not useful for some businesses, but those aren't absolute guarantees of success in today's world. And you really have to explore changes. Artificial intelligence is changing the way people are reaching other people. And so more than anything, you really want to stay on top of that. And I think things like talking to lots of business owners, that really helps. If you are listening to podcasts, or if you're looking at LinkedIn, or you're having conversations over coffee or at your local chamber of commerce, all of these things can really help with respect to developing business that you may not have been able to develop in any other way.
Yeah. Mark, I think in especially this data-driven world where everything's direct response, you're used to, you want to be able to draw the spreadsheet, right? You want to be able to say, okay, I'm going to do this many phone calls. It's going to get me that many connections. I'm going to get that many sales. Like, you're looking for that pipeline. Once you get into, you mentioned it there, branding, where suddenly us numbers-oriented people, me anyway, get way more nervous. I want to be able to put a line between the two, and you're only left with these very rough rule of thumbs. I've heard some people say, whatever, for every dollar of direct response, you want a dollar of brand awareness. Mm-hmm. But then that's only just, it feels so ephemeral. I have seen just recently this week, actually, now that we launched a CFO mastermind, which you attended last month. And yeah, we did a cold outreach campaign and an email campaign to try and promote it. And I was getting lots of responses. And I was like, wow, this is great. The email copy must be fantastic. And then I looked at it and I was like, hold on, that guy's been on the podcast. He's been on the podcast, this person. And I realized that even though I wasn't selling on the podcast, it was like creating awareness, you're delivering value. They say it's not just straight going to someone, hey, please buy my product, but you're like finding some way to deliver value before then people's natural sales resistance maybe drops a bit easier. So when you do have an offer for them, which is fair enough, we're all in business, then it hits harder. So then it's okay, cool. So now I'm thinking like, okay, I don't want to be too Machiavellian about it. A podcast is, I enjoy it and it's fun and I like talking to people, but I have to justify it for business at the end of the day. Yeah. So now my current thinking is, okay, for as much value as possible when you're doing your branding, which I consider podcasting to be branding, and then do not even think about selling anything. Just get it out of your mind. Just think help delivery. And then just people know how they, that let that audience know how they can do business with you if they want to. Way more powerful. So I'm sure my direct cold outbound campaign has close to zero conversion rate. But for the people who already know the podcast, who have been on the show or whatever, the conversion rate has got to be, I don't know, 20 or 30%. So yeah, that's what I'm learning from this podcasting strategy. But I'm figuring it out. So maybe we can compare notes as we go.
Yeah, no, you know what? Just to add to that, I think that the fundamentals, you talked about the, did you call it the sales pipeline or the sales funnel? I'm not sure. Yeah. But the fundamentals are that you should probably be thinking in terms of the sales pipeline and the sales funnel. And what are you putting into the funnel? How are the leads converting from section to section? You can't put it on a spreadsheet, but conceptually you should be thinking, where do I want to spend my time? Do I want to spend it on X or Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, or you can go on and on. You might want to pick your favorites, try it out, and just see if your funnel seems to be working like a funnel should. You may not be able to dial it in tight like we want to in the beginning, but you want to examine what's going on. You want to have that kind of conceptual structure on the business development side. If you're a really small business, you may not be at that stage, but you really want to be looking at that, even though it is hard to track. And then with respect to the podcast as being a component of that, here's one of the fundamentals I think that taps into. I've always believed this. Business is about people, and people are about relationships. No matter whether we're digital or web conferencing or whatever, there's just, once you've had a conversation with somebody and you have lots of conversations, some people there's chemistry and some people there's not. That's normal. That's natural. But if you develop chemistry with people, yeah, you start to feel that trust, likability, and man, that makes all the difference in the world. Now, I will also add this on the sales side. At some point, selling is the right thing to do. And bear with me, I'm going to give you a bit of an example, James, but I don't like to be sold, generally speaking. I like to give me information. If I think your information is pertinent to my business and I'm okay with you, then I'll come and talk to you. At some point though, you need to be closed. Here's my example. I've got a strong background in sales from when I used to go door to door as a kid selling lawn mowing services. But I didn't generally like to be sold. I liked to sell, but I didn't like to be sold. And when I bought my first house, our real estate agent took my wife and I around to many different houses. And the whole time she was asking me, what do you want? What are you looking for? What would make you happy? Because I kept saying, nah, I'm not, I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't want that. I didn't really want to buy a house that badly, but if I found the right place, I would do it because I figured it would make sense. So over the course of seeing a bunch of different houses, she asked me a lot of questions, and we were sitting in the basement of one house at one point, and she said, Ryan, you have to buy this house. I said, no, this is my second time looking at it. I said, no, I don't want to. I'm not feeling it. She said, Ryan, you need to buy this house. And this is why. You told me you wanted a house like this. You wanted a neighborhood. So you needed a price range like this. You did it because it was important for these reasons, your wife, your son, all these different, because she was pregnant at the time. She told me what I told her, but she told me at a time I needed to hear it when I wasn't thinking about it myself. It was a hard sell, but that's one of the, for me, I'm really glad she sold me and closed me on that house. It was a great thing for me at that stage and for my family, and I needed to be sold. So salespeople have their place, and there's a time and a place to close. But you're right. In the beginning stages, putting information out there, that's not the time to do it.
Yeah, it's funny because finance teams and sales teams are in opposition sometimes, right? It's different animals oftentimes and different sort of worldview. Yeah. I love sales because I feel like sales is where you really earn you're out there in the wilds of Canada, right? So it feels like you eat what you kill type of thing. And it feels like you need to be brave. You need to take action. And you are in that example there, you're helping people. Sometimes other people need that help taking action as well. And that ultimately delivers value. I'm not great at it, but I love it. And I think it's really the point of business. Like everything boils down to nothing happens until someone sells something. I love that expression. Like everything comes down to someone has to sell something. Then the rest of the world happens after that, but that has to happen.
All of my clients, every single one of them, small to medium sized businesses, but they need to work on the business development strategy. If you want bottom line profit, if you want a profit and loss statement that your finance team can show you and that you can use to understand where you're at financially, as you say, there's nothing there unless you've got some sales at the top line. You need business coming in. You need business coming in. You need to be able to fulfill on that business or provide the products to the clients. And that's critical.
So a lot of people, you had that innate sales background. A lot of people round out their experience in business with an MBA, which is something you chose to do. And what was your biggest takeaway from that experience of going to getting that professional qualification?
This goes way back into the early 2000s when I was taking my MBA. But at that time, it was, I don't know if you remember very clearly those days, James, but at that time, accounts seemed to be taking over the world. there was some regulation changes in the United States and just in general. And more I started to see accountants were being involved in on the sales side of things. For example, accountants were very involved on the pricing and the rate increases and the budgeting for the next year's sales forecast, like putting together their own budget based on the next year's sales forecast. And they were very involved on the operational side of things. How are things going? What's the efficiency of the staff? How's the productivity? What's the utilization of equipment or what have you? And I realized that because business is really what interests me. Sales is interesting. Operations is interesting. Accounting is interesting. They're all interesting. But what I liked about accounting is that it gave you that skeleton or that foundation, the structure upon which the rest of the business is built. So everything starts with sales. But at the end of the day, it all kind of rests on accounting. And one of the things I'm contemplating doing in the future is going out and buying into businesses, investing in other businesses, and using the fractional CFO business as a way to, first of all, assess what does this company look like now? What's it worth right now? What can we do to quickly fix it up? Almost like flipping a house. Let's remodel this. It's got good bones. Let's put on a granite countertop, so to speak, metaphorically speaking. Let's build a better business financially and then sell it and make a whole bunch of money. There's a lot of value there. You can help people who build up a business, you can help them with an exit strategy that's going to benefit them. You can help people who are looking to buy a business with putting together a business that is solid with good financials that they could take and work in for a number of years. There's value in it for those people. There'd be value in it for me and my team. And so when I decided to go in and begin this business, that's part of the reason why I did that, is I really wanted to lean into that kind of a thinking process. And as it turns out, I'm just having so much fun working with small to medium-sized business owners and CEOs and key stakeholders. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that they put into the business. When I was in the corporate world, my clients were large VPs or COOs, and they're not putting their own money into it. They're not risking the same amount that these small to medium-sized business owners are. So the passion level is high with these small to medium-sized businesses. And when I help them out, or when my team and I help them out, from where they are to where they want to be, that really, it benefits them and makes me feel better than in the old days when I would help our team put together something that was beneficial to our company or our client's company. That was good. That was rewarding. This is somehow more rewarding, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's a massive trend, and you're slightly ahead of that, which you're the firm that you've of this fractional CFO business. And the idea, people are starting to realize, I think, that the finances is way more than the accounts. And the benefit that a fractional CFO can bring to a business is really outsized. I'm now convinced that if you're north of $2 million in revenue, the next best hire you can make is a fractional CFO or CFO to help you, because entrepreneurs are normally great at sales, normally great at having a vision, but a CFO is the one who can put a ladder against the right wall for you and tell you exactly what you need to do to get up there. Otherwise, it's just hopes and prayers. Yeah, okay. MBAs are interesting. I've yet to meet someone who's done an MBA who, would you recommend someone take that path? Was it worthwhile?
Yeah, so it depends on what you want to do. So if you want to get into taxes and auditing, you're probably better off taking the CPA path. Sure. Becoming a CPA. But if you're interested in business, and we're talking about broad-based business, then I think the MBA path is the way to go. It gives you that well-rounded understanding of all components of business. And what drives the financial key performance indicators are things that happen on the operational side of the business. So in operations and sales, like we said, sales drives revenue. So if your top line of your profit and loss statement is revenue, and the operations are managing the expenses and they're looking after many aspects of what's going on bottom side of the profit and loss. So really understanding it all and how it ties together and what the drivers of the key financial key performance indicators are, it's a big part of what an MBA teaches you. And it's really where you're immersing yourself in that 360-degree view of business. So for me, it was the right way to go, but it's not for everybody. And it depends on what you want to do. Some fractional CFOs, they will work on other components of the business. We don't do taxes ourselves, my team and I. We collaborate with other tax accountants that do taxes, and it becomes a very functional, collaborative kind of relationship. So our clients will get them tax planning we'll do some of the tax planning with the CPAs. For the end year-end taxes. And then when the year-end taxes come, it's a seamless transition. We look after the interaction with the CPA team so that our clients don't have to spend a lot of time fussing with details they don't want to fuss with. But they're a part of the process to the degree they want to be. And so if you're looking at a CPA degree for accountants or an MBA degree for fractional CFOs, some fractional CFOs are CPAs, so that's possible too. But that's my take on it. And if you're not talking about an accounting type of role, then there's all sorts of different things that make sense. An MBA might be one of those things as well.
Okay. You've brought along today a couple of case studies, which is the fun part, like the impact you've managed to have on the clients that you've been working with, you've just been talking about. Yeah, maybe you can just tell us a bit about the, I think it's electrical services contractors, a pair of friends you started working, doing gigs. How did you get involved with them? And you managed to bring them through to exit, I understand.
Yeah. So in my earliest days of doing this, when I started my business, I was taking on smaller clients, and I actually called my company Mastery Bookkeeping and Business Consulting. So the idea was I'd be doing some bookkeeping to really understand the financials and business consulting to help them grow. What I found was that when you're bookkeeping, a lot of your focus ends up being on things like, can I please have that receipt from last month? And it's a lot less on business consulting. So I really shifted my business since then. But these two guys came to me when they were starting their business, and they had been running a sole proprietorship, and they had some revenue, some clients. But then they came to me, they incorporated, and they wanted me to help them put together their books and to manage their bookkeeping. And they wanted to get into project costing and job costing. And so I helped them put that all together. And as I changed my business, they came along with me and they wanted the new services I was providing. And my team and I, my team and I helped them work their way up. They got originally it was two shareholders. They brought in a third shareholder, and things changed a little bit with respect to the shareholders and their relationships. But ultimately, two of the shareholders built up the company. They had, I think, 11 staff at the end of things. But they got to a point where one of their suppliers made them an offer and said, listen, we want to buy your company. We love the way you guys are running it. They asked to see the financials. They were impressed with the financials. They were clean. It was good information, and they had some really good trends and baselines in place. And these two guys came to me and said, Ryan, should we sell? And I said, well, no, but okay, let's talk about it. And at the end of the day, these guys said, yes, we love doing our own business, but we're in our mid-20s. I think a couple of them are in their late 20s now, 26, 27 years old. This guy's going to offer us these huge salaries. He's promised to let us run the business, like the portion of the business that we're going to be responsible for. And he's going to make us an offer. Can you help us through this transition? We really want to do it. I said, guys, if you think it's the right thing to do, then yes. I'm an entrepreneur. The idea of becoming an employee, I didn't love that, but it was the right thing for them. So absolutely, I bought in. And what we did is I did some business valuation. I've invested, my team and I have a different software that we use and that we're competent in using. And so I ran their business through some business valuation software, and we put together a proposal for this company that was going to buy them, outlining what we thought the value of the company was with proper diligence in place. And it was more maybe than they were originally expecting to pay for the company. But throughout this process, we were able to show the value and with numbers and back them up with numbers. I helped them with the negotiation as it went back and forth. We put things together, and it was a big process, but it was an interesting process. At the end of the day, they got more money than they had expected they would get for the business. They got really good jobs in this new company where they're learning more about business. And our conversation is, and we're still having conversations together, even though they're not a client at this point because they've sold their business. But the conversation is that when they get back into business again in the future with what they've learned from this larger company that bought them, they're going to come back to me and we're going to do more. So they were really happy, and that made me feel good. And we lost a client, but in the way I don't mind losing a client. We helped them go from where they were to where they wanted to be. We got them through the exit, and they were very happy. And the company that bought them was very happy. And it looks like that's a very mutually beneficial relationship to this point. I think these guys at some point are going to want to be their own bosses again. But sure. At this point, they're thrilled. And they're at that stage of being engaged and needing to buy new houses and things like that. So having a large six-figure job for them is really good right now. When they were business owners, yes, they were building up the value of the business, but they were reinvesting a lot of what money they were making into the business to help scale. And now they're just bringing home large fat checks, and they got the money out of the business. So they're real happy for now.
I'm curious. I understand that you helped them implement Traction as part of what you did with them, Gene Wickman's system. And yeah. I had this idea in my mind that would really help in a sales process if you were able to show your processes and your core values and your everything tapped out. Did that come up at all, or was that?
Yeah, it did in two ways. One is that the company that bought them was, again, it was one of their customers. It was a larger electrical services company, much larger one, national one. And they were able to service this client in such a way that the client was blown away. They were really impressed at how efficient their operation was and how well they managed all aspects of their client relationship. And a big part of that was the fact that they had their core values laid out. They had an entrepreneurial operating system. We're tracking metrics on the operations side that were the leading indicators for the financial key performance indicators. And we were looking at making adjustments to help increase revenue, profits, and all of those things. And so when this company was asking them to, like, they were, the larger company was happy with this smaller company, and they asked them to do some pretty strange projects. This is a Winnipeg-based client I'm talking about in this case. And this larger company at one point had trouble in Calgary, and they asked this client of mine to help them in Calgary. And they put together a project plan for managing that. They managed through it. They performed awesome. They did very well. And they helped this larger supplier out. And the larger supplier was like blown away. And they couldn't understand, how do you guys get your act together like that? Part of the reason that they came to them and made them an offer is they wanted them to operate as a new division under the larger corporation, under the larger company. So these guys are actually running the smaller division now, which is really focused on the kind of business that they focused on previously. This larger company wants to learn from them and effectively expand what they're good at and make that a part of their overall operation. So in a big way, having that entrepreneurial system, I think, was attractive. And I think this larger company is probably going to adapt some of their culture and their processes.
I can imagine how, you know, that EOS system, we use it ourselves, and it's great for smaller teams. It's not too much. It's great. It solves that. There's this awkward phase, once you get over 5 employees or 10, an awkward phase where people are expecting different things from a company, but you're not behaving like a company because you're just two guys doing your thing. And then it's just the right amount of process to help the team work better together. So I give a shared language. I'm a fan of that. I'm glad to hear it had an impact, because I wonder, I think it's good, but does it really matter? I don't know. Do I have a better business because of this? I'm not sure.
Anyway. It helps internally. You run better, you feel better, you know, you have a better time at work. And then externally, it makes a result that has an impact, a positive impact. So both ways.
So the second case study, things were going well, but there were sort of some challenges when you came in, as I understand it.
Yeah. So in this business, picture this, it's a business that's growing quickly. There's a relatively large team on board. A lot of them are shareholders who've invested in the business. They're looking at continuing to grow. And when we came in, we were brought in because their CPA, their tax accountant, said, man, the books are a mess. Can you help them out? And we'll often engage with a new client that way, where, you know, one of the reasons they come to us is their books are a mess. And so we'll help them get that in order. We don't do a lot of the bookkeeping anymore. We'll still do some bookkeeping in a transitory period, in a transition period, but we'll outsource it. We'll help them bring on a bookkeeper, like a full-time person in-house, or we'll help them with a third party, or we can use some of my own subcontractors. So I've got a variety of different ways of helping a company with bookkeeping, but this company started bad bookkeeping. As they worked through, so we took over, we got that fiscal year all fixed up, and the CPA was able to file their taxes. And then in the new year, as they started to really grow, we were talking to them about cash flow and how, guys, just this is going to be a problem. And I think they were aware that it was going to be challenging, but they didn't know how challenging it was going to be managing the cash flow. Because as you grow quickly, you're developing and investing in the infrastructure. You're putting in advertising dollars so they can get more clients. You're hiring people so they can fulfill the services to these clients. You're investing in equipment and leasehold improvements and all of these different things. And they were doing that with the shareholder money, but they were running out of it. And they, in some cases, they'd have some really good months and some other months that weren't that good. That was the nature of their business. And so some months they were flush with cash, and then other months they were like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? To their credit, they managed through it. But then at one point the CEO came to me and he said, Ryan, like, you talked about this with me before, but I'm ready. Let's do some proper budgeting and let's do a proper cash flow forecast. So we put them through, we did 3-way budget planning with them. And we actually, even in that situation, we used our business evaluation software to show the shareholders, listen, I know it's stressful. The cash is scary. The profit and loss isn't what you had originally expected, but you guys are doing really well. Here's the value of your business right now. And they were like, I think they're fairly impressed by that. I think a lot of them were getting that feeling that they should probably just jump ship and take their money back somewhere else. But when we showed them the business value, and we showed them the budget and the forecast saying, hey, you will be profitable in 2025. Your cash flows will even out. They felt a lot better. The team, now they've got an awesome team. So they all came together and now they've worked their way through that. We worked with the RBC and they've got a line of credit for $1 million right now. There's a lot of things they've been able to do. And we've been working with the Business Development Bank of Canada using some of these forecasts. And I helped them put together a business plan that is compelling. And so they're in good shape now. And that company's shooting for the stars. It's exciting to be working with that company. The only problem is, as they grow like this, they're going to be at the point before too long where they're going to need a full-time on-staff CFO. And we'll have to transition them over to the full-time CFO. But that's another instance where I don't mind losing a client. It's a happy thing.
So you mentioned a 3-way budgeting process there. Maybe tell us, what is that and what's the benefit of it?
If you talk to somebody about building out a budget or a forecast, it depends. Everybody's different, right? Everybody's got a different level of accounting. So I'm careful I always try to aim at my audience with respect to explaining it. But think of it this way. You want to know, what are our sales going to be? What are our expenses going to be? What kind of profit are we going to have? And you want to lay that out on a timeline. it's good to say, okay, next year we want that, but let's break it down by month. So in each month, what do we expect the sales to be? What do we expect the expenses to be? What do we expect the profit to be? That's a one-way profit and loss forecast. And most people understand that and think about that. They do it in their head oftentimes, right? Every month you think, okay, I've got this much in sales, this much in expenses, my profit is this. That's a profit and loss forecast. But the reality is, as your business grows, you start to realize that, gee, I thought I could have swore I was going to make a whole bunch of money this month, but there's no cash in the bank. Okay, well, now you get into the second part of things, which is cash flow forecasting. You're forecasting your statement of cash flows effectively. And the idea there is that you might have an invoice. You might invoice a client for $100,000 this month, right? So you send out that invoice and it shows as profit on your profit and loss forecast. But that money's not in the bank yet. They have 30 days to pay that. You go, okay, so the cash is different. The cash flow is different from the profit and loss. And you have to pay your employees maybe next week, right? They're not going to wait till you get paid. They want their money every 2 weeks or what have you, twice a month. Sure. So you've got to pay the cash for employees, but you might not have the cash. That might be, yes, you're profitable technically on the profit and loss statement, but the timing of the cash makes things so you've got a cash flow issue. And there's a variety of ways you can manage around that and mitigate that kind of risk. But one of the best ways to do it is to build out a cash flow forecast or to forecast on your statement of cash flows. So if you've got your profit and loss forecast and you've got a cash flow forecast, that's great. But the other statement, financial statement, there's three big financial statements. The third one is the balance sheet. You want to forecast on your balance sheet too, because it holds things that impact the cash flow forecast that aren't on the profit and loss forecast. For example, if a shareholder is going to put money into the business, that goes onto the balance sheet, but it affects the cash. If the shareholder is going to take money out, same thing. If you put an expense on a credit card, that shows on your balance sheet. It doesn't show on your profit and loss. It shows on your profit and loss differently, but it impacts your cash flow in a way that your profit and loss is not impacted. And so there's a variety of different things like that. These three statements are all intertwined. So if you do a three-way forecast, you're forecasting on the profit and loss statement or the income statement, sometimes people call it that, and you're forecasting on the balance sheet and you're forecasting on the statement of cash flows. It's a three-way forecast. If you can do that, you can have a pretty clear understanding of where you're at, where you want to be, and you can manage along the way. It serves almost like a dashboard that helps you understand where you're at. And if you miss the forecast, if you're not hitting the numbers in the forecast, you can go back and look at the plan, what you originally planned versus what you actually got, and try to figure out why you got a discrepancy. Once you get comfortable with the process and you do that on a regular basis, you can start to get predictive. You can start to, in essence, cause results on the forecast. You can start to say, hey, what can we do? What can we tweak over here to drive better results on the forecast? I think you used the term operationalize your budget. I've heard you say that before, which is a great way to put it. Let's turn our budget into a plan that we're going to execute to. And let's plan, how many cold calls do the salespeople have to make? How efficient does the operation personnel need to be? How are we going to manage our accounts payable? Is there an efficient way to do that? And you get some of your software really helps with that in a big way. And so these are the different things as a fractional CFO, we can go to our clients and help them develop the processes and put in place the systems to optimize their financial results. And if you can do that, then borrowing money from the bank, that becomes a fun process because banks love that. They don't often get that. If they can see that kind of stuff, they love it. And it really helps you grow your business because at some point, look at large businesses, at some point debt is a part of the equation. You want to leverage your money by borrowing other money. If you can borrow money at 5% interest and get a 20% return on that investment, that's smart, right? And so there's reasons why you might want to do that. That depends on what stage you're at in business.
What I like about that story is that you connect between the team and the enterprise value. A lot of times the team won't care or know about enterprise value in the business, like the value of the business itself. By allowing you to draw a direct line between, okay, what this business is going to be worth, they see the value in that. And that can oftentimes be a lot more exciting number than it's a bigger number, right? Oftentimes. And that can, and people can then draw that back to their own personal, say, okay, this is, if I have share options or whatever, they can understand why we're doing this thing, not just hit the sales quota next month and move on to the quarter after that. I love that idea of being able to put everyone on the same team, so to speak. Oftentimes there's a big divide between the shareholders and the executives even sometimes. And if you're able to close that up, which is something I'm thinking about doing for our own business, wondering how to do it. I love the idea of it. Yeah. On the other hand, you don't want to sell your own team a story that's not true, right? You got to make it real. And what I love what you're saying there is you bring the business valuation software together with the forecasting software. So it's all connected. It's not just bunnies and unicorns and wavy hands. It's okay, we hit these targets. This is what's going to happen. This is what it means for you. This is what it means for your share options. And people can really get on the same page.
That's why I love accounting. That's why I love accounting. It's the language, right? That everybody can speak that language. Ultimately, they don't need to understand how you come up with the numbers, but when you show them the numbers on a spreadsheet, people can feel good about that. And then they can hold you to it too. So it works in both ways.
Very good. Ryan, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about your ideal customer now today, late 2024, early 2025.
Sure. My ideal customer, ideally they're between maybe $2 or $3 million in annual revenue and up to maybe $40 or $50 million in annual revenue. They want the same sorts of expertise and tools and experience that an executive level chief financial officer would bring to the table for a larger organization, but they can't afford a full-time on-staff chief financial officer. So a fractional CFO can come in and bring that experience to the table, bring the technology to the table, the competency, and leverage the time and expertise of the existing key stakeholders in the business. A lot of the people that we work with are smart people, and they probably could do some of the things we're doing, but their time is better spent focusing on the things they do best. They will get the best return on investment for their business. If a company's smaller than $2 or $3 million in annual revenue, that's okay. We'll still talk to them. We even do business with some companies that are under $1 million in annual revenue. If they're planning on growing, that's fine. But by the time you're at $2 or $3 million in annual revenue, usually, depending on the kind of business, it's a no-brainer. The return on investment for working with us is going to far exceed the cost, and it's going to make things way better. And there's so many businesses, James, in that range between $2 or $3 million in annual revenue and say 40 or 50 that don't have anything more than a full-time bookkeeper and a year-end tax accountant. They're missing all of that financial planning and analysis. They're missing all of that managerial accounting. They're missing the planning and the forecasting, the oversight. And there's just so much value that we can bring to the table there. Wow. Just one other caveat there. There's different industries and there's different geographies. Generally, we're working with clients in Canada, but we can make exceptions, and we have done in the past. Industry-wise, we'll talk to anybody. We've dealt with a variety of industries, but there's lots out there. We've dealt with SaaS companies, construction companies, contractors, and even some light manufacturing. I probably wouldn't be a good fit for anybody who's into high, heavy manufacturing with lots of work in progress, inventory management. That probably wouldn't be a fit for me. But one thing I say to anybody, let's have a conversation, set up a meeting with me. We'll have a web conference and we'll both leave that conversation smarter. Even if we don't do business together, we'll both learn something. I guarantee that.
Right. And I can recommend the podcast as well. Punchy Business Podcast.
Fractional CFO's Punchy Podcast.
Punchy Podcast. Okay. Yeah. That was very good. All right. So people can, you have a very nice website where I recommend people have a look at masterycfo.com. Nice photography, nicely put together there. And I guess you're on LinkedIn. That's the other best way to get in touch with you. Is that right?
Yeah. LinkedIn is a great way to get in touch with me. You can access my calendar directly on LinkedIn. So it's Ryan Chenier. It's RyanChenier. And Mastery Fractional CFO Services, we've got a business page on LinkedIn as well. So that's a great place. The website is www.masterycfo.com. And my contact information is there too. So by all means, reach out to me. And there's other people on my team you can reach out to as well.
Great. So let's wrap things up by asking my rinky-dink question, which is, who's your business hero and why?
My business hero is my dad. And the story I have that I think explains why that is because back in the late 90s, he was the senior vice president of group sales for Nevada and Omaha, I think Nevada and Colorado for the Mutual of Omaha group. He had a pretty senior position, but I was picking his brain about business. I was a young guy really wanting to learn about business. I was reading every book on the shelf and I was talking to everybody I could, but I was asking him, we were going for a drive one day. I was like, Dad, how about this? How about that? What do you think of this? What do you think of that? Give me a great closing line, whatever. And he said, the best advice I can give you, Ryan, is have integrity. And I was disappointed because I was hoping for something a bit snazzier than that. But yeah, over time, I've never forgot that. And it's proven to be the best advice anyone's given me about business. Do what you say you're going to do. Have integrity. Follow through on things. Make sure that you say what you feel to the degree you can. There's some things you don't want to talk about. Like you don't want to talk about maybe politics sometimes in business and so on. But have integrity. A lot of people don't have that. And if you have that, it's going to help you in business. It's going to help you over time. It's going to make you feel good about what you do. And so my dad was right again. And he's my hero that way for sure. 100%. He inspires me still.
I love that example. My dad is my moral compass, I call him. Like he's the one who always does the right thing. And I always think, what would dad do here? And there's normally a pretty sharp answer that comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. As you get older, you know, what goes around comes around, karma, the golden rule, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot to it. And having integrity just covers the bases that way. You can really go to sleep at night and you can feel good about what you do. And other people will feel good about what you do as well. So that's How can you lose with that kind of an approach?
Very good. Thanks for coming along today, Ryan. And thank you for listening this far into the podcast. Congratulations. Your special reward for your perseverance and interest in Ryan and me is to be able to go to procurementexpress.com/partners. Ryan's actually signed up for this already. It's a webinar where I explain how I have my own take on how fractional CFOs can explain their value. And I've got a webinar there. So if you are a fractional CFO and you are looking for a way to explain your value in a way that CEOs can really grok and understand, I put my take on it there in the form of a webinar. And there's also a case study from one of our best partners, Ben Lacretas, on how he uses Procurement Express to operationalize budgets for his clients and actually achieve those profit outcomes that they're aiming for. So thanks very much for listening. And thanks for coming along today, Ryan. It's been fun.
Thank you very much. It has been fun.